Yeah.
Okay, so we're good.
All
I'll
right.
Mute myself now.
Good. So this event is being recorded, and the link to the audio version of this event will be posted in the chat, and it will be announced later by one of the members. So as is our custom for sure, but before we start this meeting, we acknowledge that we're gathered on the ancestral lands of the Attawan people and the territory of the Haudenosaunee and the Anishinaabe, and that we are on treaty lands of the Mississaugas of the Credit. And of course, we know that there are many a rich cultural presence in Guelph, and we're blessed with many First Nations and Métis and First Nations people that live here. And somehow I particularly came to mind to me is my deep respect for the grandfather teachings, and especially that whole notion of respect and listening to each other. That is so much an integral part. So you know my name. I'm Saya Van Gies. Do we need to do all that? Yes. Well, we were supposed to stick to the script. my name is Saya Van Gies, and I'm your host. And we're delighted that Marion Thorpe is the co-host. She's the techie person on board. And Les Hackett, he is going to be the timekeeper. And maybe you could just give us a little, oh, it's a school bell. Of course, a school teacher. So he'll give us a ding. As your time is up, the event is hosted by the Guelph Wellington Coalition for Social Justice, a community-based coalition of individuals and organizations who advocate for equity, inclusivity, and well-being of our community. Questions for the candidates were formulated by a new community group, and we kind of came together organically over the last few weeks, and we called ourselves Get Involved Guelph. So today's agenda consists of introductions and opening remarks, followed by the Q&A session and ending with closing remarks. Now, during the opening remarks, each candidate, you'll have a minute and a half. Introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about your campaign and your vision for the city. And then the Q&A has seven questions that were prepared by People Get Involved Guelph. And you'll each have a minute and a half to respond. And it expected that all the candidates will be most respectful. And that is not going to be necessary for us to say that to this particular group, I don't for sure. So we do expect a respectful presentation. And the moderator, I do have the discretion, and Marion does too, to mute any remarks that are deemed disrespectful. Now, after the round of prepared questions, the virtual floor may be open as time allows, and people will be invited to post their questions in the chat. So each candidate will then have the minute and a half for closing comments, and of course, in that reverse order. Oh, Maureen, I'm just going to let you handle people as they come in. This is wonderful. They are coming in. So we will, let's move into the prepared questions. And what Maureen's going to do is put the prepared questions in the chat so you can visually look at them, and I'll repeat them as well. So the first one has to do with well-being. Now, the vision statement of Guelph Strategic Plan is an inclusive, connected, prosperous city where we look after each other and our environment. The first adjective is inclusive. While most Guelphites value diversity, some citizens will suffer from hate and other forms of abuse, such as racist and anti-2S LGBTQ plus incidents. So the question to you, each candidate, for a minute and a half, how will you help Guelph progress towards its inclusivity vision? And I've been much remiss because I did not give you time for your opening comments. I'm so sorry. So I'm going to start then. Hisham, welcome, welcome. And you chose to be, by random, the first speaker. So tell us about yourself and a little bit about your platform and so forth. Hisham. Now
Hisham. Now, yeah, so I was just waiting for Marianne to unmute me or allow me to unmute. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for the host and for the opportunity to be heard. Thank you, Saya and Marianne, and of course, Kathy and Leanne, who became my best friends now. We meet every day. My name is Hisham Gnedi, and I work as law professor, and I work as political advisor and business advisor. I moved to Guelph in 2013. I chose Guelph to move to, so it was something I was looking for, and I'm planning to live in Guelph the rest of my life. I have a unique international experience working in many countries and living in many countries, including work for United Nations and other international organizations. So when I heard about the election, I never considered something like this. But when I heard about it, democracy was the focus of my work as research, for research purposes. Democracy was always the focus of my work. And I see really the core of our democracy starts with the city council. It is the first step. And that's why I kind of decided I should step up and nominate myself for the election, try to implement my ideas. I have unique experience with business and politics. So I mix both of them with my diverse background, makes me strong candidate for my main strong thing is innovation and diversity. These are the main two things I believe I will bring to the table. Have very innovative ideas to bring the city to the 2022, that is the year we are living in, implementing new and old technologies that we will be all benefits from. Sorry, I'm in my car. So I just want to say to everyone that I had to drop my daughter to her practice. So sorry, I'm in my car.
Thank you, Hisham. Thank you for your minute and a half introduction. I see a number of people have attended recently. We're into the meeting already. The candidates have chosen by random order their order of speaking. And Leanne Karanchi selected second. So Leanne, please do make your minute and a half opening, unless for some reason we can't hear our
Hi, Saya. I'm back again.
Okay. But all right, so Leanne, please.
Well, she can't hear. I can't hear.
No, well, she's not muted. Maureen, can you set it up so that the four of us can unmute ourselves?
Great, thanks. She's given me mute permission, so I'm ready to go. Okay, we'll start the clock. Thank you, Saya. Thank you to the Coalition for organizing this forum. Of course, to my fellow candidates for sharing this platform, and to all of you for being here to engage in our local democracy. I am extremely proud of my record of service and accountability to you during my past terms of council. My approach has always been one of balance. It is data-driven and it's citizen-focused. A bit about myself. I don't consider myself a politician. I'm in first and foremost a public servant. I don't belong to any political party, and I believe that the municipal level of government is the most impactful in people's daily lives. I've worked professionally in the private sector, in the public sector, and the nonprofit sector, and I have operated a successful independent business. I have an undergrad degree from McMaster University and a master's degree in leadership from the University of Guelph. I believe in community service as the core to every local citizen, and I have sat on the board of numerous local organizations. Before I was elected to council, I was an Upper Grand School Board trustee. I'm running for re-election because I think we have serious issues facing the city of Guelph. I sense that particularly in this term, we're at a crossroads. I believe that your input, the public input, is always essential to decision making, especially in my role. I have a strong track record of outreach through surveys, through town halls, attending community meetings, and I actively seek input from constituents through the Ward 5 website, social media, and regular newsletters. You need experienced, balanced, data-driven, strategic leadership at City Hall. And more than ever, your voice for Ward 5 needs to remain strong and predictable. And I would be honored to be that voice for the next 4 years.
Thank you very much, Leanne. Is Denise, did Denise sign in? I don't see her name on the list. Denise was the fourth candidate who was going to attend. She did not give regrets, and she has not sent me anything that says anything to the contrary. So when Denise comes in, we'll accommodate her. And so Kathy, you chose to be you're the last one. So you're half, please. And Les, if I may, can you make a sound or bang it with a pencil or something? Because we're not hearing anything.
Hear that?
There. Yeah. Maybe what you can take the bell and just bang it with your pen or something instead of the clacker, maybe. Just a suggestion, because we didn't hear it. All right, Kathy, your minute and a half, please.
Okay, thanks. So first, I'd like to thank the Coalition and friends, the Get Involved Guelph, for hosting this event, and to thank those watching for your interest in this election. First, a bit about me. I'm a longtime resident of Ward 5, where I live with my husband, and I've raised my three children. I've been on council for the past 8 years and served another 12 years previously to 2006, so I come with a lot of experience. In my other life, I'm a mediator. I have volunteered for many organizations like the Guelph Youth Music Center, Community Health Center, the John Howard Society, Community Justice Initiatives. It's that grassroots service that originally inspired me to become involved in city politics, and it's that passion that has me running, continued passion that has me running for re-election. Guelph is a great city, and we have a lot to celebrate. We all want to live in a safe, affordable, inclusive, and sustainable community that supports the well-being of everyone. However, Guelph, like many other communities, is facing some challenges right now. I've taken a leadership role on many issues with positive outcomes, and I want to continue with that important work with the support of Ward 5 residents. I've been an effective and responsive voice on City Council for the past 4 years. As I talk to many people about their priorities over the next 4 years, I hear some common themes. How can Guelph sustain its quality of life and grow to accommodate the provincial targets of 208,000 people by 2051? I've also heard comments about climate change, homelessness, traffic, community safety, and loss of trees. Today, I look forward to hearing what your priorities are.
Thank you, Kathy. For those folks that just got on, we have just heard the opening comments of a minute and a half from the three candidates that are online with us. We have thanked them, and we do want everybody to know, just a reminder, we are being recorded, so you can hear the audio portion of this later. Well, I'll reread the question then, and as Maureen puts that into the chat. And maybe it's already there. Let me put my chat on. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So the question, Maya? Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
How much time do they get?
Good question. A minute and a half to address each, and that's a maximum, a minute and a half to address each of the questions.
You can hear my bell?
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you.
Okay. I won't still have a ding, because boy, if they're, you better, yeah.
I have a dinger.
Okay, thank you, Les. So the vision statement then of Guelph Strategic Plan is an inclusive, connected, prosperous city where we look after each other and our environment. First adjective is inclusive. While most Guelphites value diversity, some citizens still suffer from hate and other forms of abuse, such as racist and anti-2S LGBTQ plus incidents. So the question to each of you is, for a minute and a half response, how will you help Guelph progress towards its inclusivity vision? And I'm going to ask Hisham if you would address that first, please.
Yeah, of course. So I believe in conversation, community conversation, dialogue between citizens, and I think the city council should facilitate more of these conversations. I believe we are all, and the common sense will say, we are all human being, and we are all equal, and we are all we all like want to live our life in a good way. So I think that even if with some citizens who are not accepting others, I think the difference is not that big between all of us. And if we open the door to more dialogue, people will realize how that is. We are all connected at the end. That is, we are all equal and we are all the same. And even we have almost the same values and the same goals in life. So I think it's it will be great if we see more events like hosted by the city council or by the city staff themselves. I think we can advocate for more society dialogue between all kind of citizens, and I think that will encourage people to know each other better and will hear to each other, listen to each other about their stories, about their experience, about everything they have to add. And this is part of the great diverse town that is we are aiming for. Thank you.
Thank you, Hisham. Leanne, please.
Thanks. Great question. I think any one of us can walk the streets of Guelph, and we know that we are a very diverse city. But you're right, Sai, in your opening remarks that there are still those who are experiencing hatred and discrimination, and we need to call it out when we see it. That's the number one thing that the city can do, or any of us as individuals. It's not up to government to do that, and all of us should be doing it. I'm very pleased that we hired our first senior policy advisor, equity, anti-racism, and Indigenous initiatives at the City of Guelph during this past term of council. We've aligned our council schedule to be more sensitive to the many cultural and religious celebrations and holidays so that we're not overlapping with our ability to include all citizens from participating in local democracy. We can ensure that we have, especially for our First Nations representation on committees that have to do with land use and river and our river systems, because certainly water source protection and land use is something that part of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission has called upon us to include Indigenous communities in those consultations, and we should be doing that anyway. Most specifically, the Ontario Reformatory lands, because some of the oldest Indigenous artifacts in all of Canada have been found along the riverlands at the back of that property. And you know what? Wrapping up, celebrate more. Let's celebrate all that our diverse community brings. I mean, we have expertise and intelligence and everything that every citizen brings to the table has a perspective and a lens that can only make our city stronger. So let's celebrate it when it happens and do more of it.
Thank you, Leanne. Kathy, please.
Thanks. So you quoted from the strategic plan, and the strategic plan comes from our community plan, which was approved in 2018 or 19, I'm not sure yet, but this past year it was brought forward for much more consultation for it to become much more inclusive in its language and the actions, and so that the strategic plan could actually reflect that inclusiveness in the community. And out of that, actually where that meeting was that we approved, that was where we gave staff the permission at that time to hire the person that Leanne was talking about. It was the senior policy advisor for equity, anti-racism and Indigenous studies. And we also hired an Indigenous relations officer. And one of the things that the first things that'll be on their plate or has been on their plate is to develop an action plan for anti-racism and exclusion in our community. And I think that's going to be great. We need to be implementing that when that comes forward and listen to the community as that comes out of that, because they will have been gone through a lot of consultation in the community. The other thing that I think is important, so I'm a mediator, so I'm in the field of restorative justice practices. And I'm part of a SULA project in Waterloo, which is really interesting. It uses restorative justice approach to harm done to people about race, from racism and exclusion. And, you know, I would like to see much more of that sort of, I'd like to see that coming to our community. But we need to also acknowledge that racism and exclusion exists in many forms, that it starts with us. We need to also uncover our own biases and how we are exclusive and exclusion ourselves, and constantly examine that so that we can become much more inclusive leaders. We need to work on ourselves as well.
What I value so much about these sessions is how much we're learning what the city is already doing. I suggest that maybe we have more of these sessions outside of the election, because, and I know you do to some degree for sure. The next question is around climate change. In December 2021, the city committed to prepare and work towards interim community-wide greenhouse gas emission targets by the end of June 2022. However, only targets for the city corporation itself have been developed, accounting for only 2.2% of the community total. So the question is, what would you do to accelerate the implementation of the city's commitment to a comprehensive city community partnership for Guelph to reach that net zero in 2050? And if I may, Kathy, if you would answer that first, please.
Yeah, so that came forward, and I know there are some groups asking for us to do interim targets for the community as well. And I'm open to doing that. However, we have to be aware that there's a lot of this we can't impose upon the community. And it's, to me, it's almost like the water conservation, how successful Guelph has been on water conservation, how we educated and brought people in the community along on that. And it took a lot of education and creating those partnerships. Now, we had set up this entity, our Energy Guelph, to work on the community part of the energy plan. That has now been brought in-house, so we will be working much more on that. We're initiating a PACE program. So it's a retrofit, energy efficient retrofits to your home that you can get loans for. We'll be implementing that. We've got a great $10 million grant from FCM. Hooray, to start that. But there's other things like, you know, just tree planting and bringing in the private sector on that. We see places like industrial and commercial areas where it's, you know, all turf. Well, you know, it's about taking that healthy landscape program that we have. And even though it is for businesses as well, most people see it as residential. So there's things like that. There's a lot we can do to work with our community partners. We plant 10,000 trees a year. All of this helps. And as I said, it's how we bring the community on side. And like I said, we can dictate and make an aspirational target, an interim target. We have the 2050 target for sure, but the interim targets, I'm open to it, but not without community consultation. And that's how we bring the community along.
If we can. Thank you. Leanne?
Thanks. Great question. As one of the movers of the 2050 to net zero motion, I also had an amendment to move it up. It didn't pass, but I think the language we added is 2050 or sooner. But yeah, there is a lot we can do with the private sector and with our residents. We cannot force certain carbon reduction strategies, but we can certainly incentivize them. We know that 32% of greenhouse gas emissions in Ontario is transportation. And not all of that is just city buses and city fleet. We need to have greater electric charging infrastructure in our city, make room for multi-use trails so that people can change their modal split of how they get around town. We need more carbon sequestration, planting of trees, so that we can offset wherever greenhouse gas reductions have been maximized. We need to incentivize either through bylaw or grants or building permit facilitation for all large roofs, so rooftop solar on any roof that's a certain size or more. So you look at buildings like Stone Road Mall or warehouses or strip plazas, and all of those large roofs can be incentivized or new construction bylaw for a certain size. We'd love for the province to add net zero requirements to the Ontario Building Code, but we do have in our new official plan, we have lots of language about making net zero. We can increase incentives and grant money for the PACE program, because we know that 24% of greenhouse gas emissions are mm-hmm. buildings, residential buildings. So we need to get the PACE program for energy retrofits up and running as quickly as possible.
Thank you, Leanne. Now, I know for that Hisham is going to feel very badly. He was in his car and it looked like perhaps he stopped. I know he'll feel very, very badly. I've been at other events where Hisham has been present. So he won't get an opportunity to answer that. And perhaps later on we might, because the recording people may be interested in that as well. The next question is around housing. There is a growing demand for more housing in Guelph, including affordable, social, and supportive housing. The provinces has targeted for substantial growth, which challenges our sustainability. So this is a two-part question, and you'll find that Marion has posted it in the chat, and that's for all attendees. If you'd like to put on your chat, then you can see that question in print. So part one is, how would you accelerate the rate of infill, intensification, and mixed-use development in Guelph? And the second part is, would you welcome social housing construction in your Ward 5, along with increased annual funding for affordable housing reserve? And perhaps if I may can suggest, we can just kind of go back and forth, right? So Leanne, if you would address that first, please.
Well, the quick answer to how do we move forward? The answer is very simple. We follow Shaping Guelph, our growth management plan. We have an amazing comprehensive document that had a lot of public consultation, extensive public consultation to create our new official plan. And that Shaping Guelph growth management strategy outlines affordability, phasing, how we meet our density targets, the different forms of housing. We also have our comprehensive zoning bylaw coming to this term of council. And so we want to make sure that that zoning bylaw is passed by this term of council. It supports the inclusive zoning and more accessory residential dwelling units. We've also just approved three supportive housing projects. We've got more funding for the we put in matching funding for the Homes for Good program. So we do need more social housing construction. Do I support city budget money for the construction of social housing? Yes, to a limit. The construction of social housing is not our jurisdiction. So we need to be very careful that we're not being inadvertently downloaded upon during this housing crisis. We need supportive housing and cooperative housing funded by the province. And then we put our money through our consolidated social service provider, the Wellington County, for subsidization and ongoing costs related to those new projects. So that's where we need to focus our resources. Do we need more? Absolutely. But it has to be sustainable. If it's not sustainable, we're not solving the problem.
Thank you, Leanne. Kathy, please.
Thanks. So ditto to what Leanne said, we have a plan and it's a new plan because these new targets of 208,000 are just recently have been given to Guelph, and we need to follow that plan for the near future. 46% of the growth that we're to be getting is to be done by infill. That means within the older existing parts and built up parts of the city. So we need to really do that well. We need to do that smartly. We can't grow too fast because growth doesn't pay for itself. We can't grow faster than what the plan has because our plan then dictates all of our budgets and infrastructure needs and facilities. And when you understand that only 80% of growth pays for itself, there's another 20% that falls on the rest of the taxpayers. And that doesn't, then it doesn't become sustainable. We can't keep up with the growth itself. So infill, though, it is a bit easier. There's some infrastructure there, but for a lot of infill, you need, you know, along the transit corridors, and we've had to put in new pipes on Arthur and in those Arthur Street and in those areas as well. So you also have to bring those infrastructure up to date as well. So we've done some stuff with that plan that will make infill a lot easier within the city. We can do in what would be called R1B zones. We can do three-story small apartments and townhouses. So that's going to help. And we have social housing in Ward 5 in a number of locations. And I don't think that was ever a problem previously. And if the provincial governments decide to get back into that co-op and social housing, I think we would be welcoming it. I certainly would be.
Thank you, Kathy. This is a question about the library. As an anchor component of the Baker District development, the new main branch library will bring significant social, economic, and tourism benefits to Guelph. The project is well underway. Breaking contracts would cost taxpayers millions, and we'd lose the housing units that are attached to the project. So the question out of that asks you to speak to your views on this topic. So Kathy, just so to reverse it, I know that makes you speak back to back.
That's my favorite topics. So I played a leadership role in the last two terms, bringing the library forward, and I will continue to do so. This has been a long time coming. It's just this project has had to jump through more hoops than any other project in the history of this city. There's been study after study, business cases, location studies, you know, need studies, and it's all indicated that we need this size, 88,000 square feet of library space to get us into the 21st century and provide an inclusive, accessible services. So I think that's what's really important. This library is leveraging $125 million in private investment in the Baker Street District in our downtown. And it's really important to delay that now will cost us money, not only in with the developer, our partner, Windmill, our partner, but we spend hundreds of thousands of dollars putting band-aids on the existing 60-year-old library. How financially responsible is that? And it's not accessible. The elevator breaks down every week, sometime with people with disabilities in it. It's shameful. And the building has asbestos in it. It's not a good working condition. So we can't delay this any longer. This is, you know, this could have cost us $15 million 20 years ago. And here we are now. Delays cost money. And as you can see, I'm quite passionate about this issue. So we really need to move on with this. Just build it. Let's get going. And that's so important.
Thank you, Kathy. Leanne, please.
I don't think I could get any more passionate or clear about this issue than Kathy just did. So thank you, Kathy, for articulating all of my thoughts and feelings. I'm on the Downtown Guelph Board of Management. We've been promising downtown residents and downtown merchants this facility for 20 years. We've been building residential development all around the edge of downtown, the tri-car developments, the metalworks developments, all of the new developments. We're going to have this based Baker District. We're going to have this downtown precinct, including a library built to support what isn't just a trunk, it's also a branch. It's the largest branch library. We have 40,000 people living downtown. This is their branch library as well. So it serves many, many functions. The leverage on the economic development, I just can't say enough that if we don't move forward with this, then our all of our downtown investments are never going to be fully leveraged. Honestly, I have to say it's very frustrating, not you for asking the question, but it's frustrating that we're still having to ask and answer this question in every election debate this year, because in 2018, it was a question in the election. In 2014, it was a question in the election. In 2010, it was a question in the election. And here we are in 2022. And I thought we had moved the project just far enough along that we couldn't reopen it. But here we are again with some candidates saying that they would reopen it at the first opportunity, once the new council is sitting. So I would not be in favor of any reopening. We need to move forward. We need to build this thing, build it right-sized. We're not cutting square footage and we're not cutting the amenities. There's a needs analysis. This is such a data-driven decision on every level. We can't go backwards on this one.
Thank you both. And you can kind of catch the flavor of the question, that there were some shivers up people's spines when it was a question again. So thank you very, very much. There's several people that just entered. We just finished a question of the library. Hisham was online and he was driving. So obviously he's out of some kind of a zone and he's not here. So I'm sad that we can't hear his voice, but we're delighted that both Kathy and Leanne are here. The next question is around public transit. It is generally understood that public transit use in cities must double by 2030 to meet climate goals and emission targets. The question, what would you do to help us meet this target? And Leanne, I'm going to ask you to do the first one, please.
Transit ridership, the only way to grow transit ridership is reliability and accuracy. We can get that sound turned off. Benny, do you want to mute yourself, please? Okay.
Bro, hey guys, I'm so sorry. You can go ahead and go. I'm just going to leave, okay? I'm sorry.
I actually feel bad.
It seems like, sorry.
Just mute. Thanks. Okay. Frequency and reliability. So we absolutely have to make the investments necessary to make that happen. We need to get people to the right spots in on time so that they don't choose a car or another form of transportation. We also need to make transit more connected to our other regional areas. So if it means we have to go outside of our area to have the Go Link in Aberfoyle or links to Fergus or Rockwood or places where it can pick up Go service in order to be more effective.
Leanne, just stop for a minute, please. May I ask, Marion, would you remove Benny, please?
Yeah, as soon as I can find him.
Okay, just hold on a second, please.
I've got Benny muted.
It doesn't matter. Would you just mute him, please?
Stop fucking muting me.
Marion, would you remove him, please?
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to get him out. I'm trying to do it.
Okay. I'll remove him. Okay. Sorry about that, folks.
No problem.
Thank you very much. And just while I've interrupted anyway, I'm going to welcome Hisham back. And welcome, Hisham.
Yeah, sorry, technology failed me, but I'm back now.
Yeah, I know. And I expressed your concern that, and we knew that you would be very sorry that's happened. Yeah. We are now addressing the question around public transit. And what you would do to help meet that target. You can read the question in the chat, Hisham, and I'll certainly get you a minute to get your head together. And Leanne, if you would carry on, please. Leanne has just started the answer. Sorry, Leanne.
No worries. I think I got everything out. I just wasn't sure what got dubbed over by our the sound from the previous guest. I was talking about the connection and interregional. So to have to go outside of our borders to connect with Grand River Transit, to go outside of our borders to connect with GO Transit and Aberfoyle, because I think connectivity, frequency, and reliability are the three key pillars of growing ridership. And that's what's going to get people out of their cars. Those are the three things that will do that. And I'm glad Hashim is back because he has a unique lens on the transit discussion. So I'm glad he's back in time for this question.
Yeah, me too. Thank you, Leanne. And
Hashim, Kathy will address it next, sorry. And I'll give you the closing minute and a half. Kathy?
Thank you. So transit is something that we need to start getting right because it seems that we've had some challenges with transit. And we've done this past year an action plan with a route review. And I brought forward the motion at budget time to do the first $3 million investment in it. And the chamber reminded us that for every dollar you spend on transit, there's a $3 economic spinoff. And so this is important. And when we think of transit too, we need to think of affordability, reliability, as Leanne has talked about, and accessibility. And we're sort of moving forward on a lot of those fronts with the affordable bus pass that has a sliding scale. There's also, we got free transit for those under 12. I'd like to extend that to teenagers as well, because when you get them young, they become lifelong transit users. You know, it becomes much more easier for those. So we're coming up to the transit master plan in the next term, this next year, actually. And I think we're going to have a lot of opportunities there to have a good community discussion. So we've done the route review, we've done that, we're going to, and the 10-year action plan. But the transit master plan is going to address a lot of the issues, like do you have coverage and frequency and those types of things. And frequency has become very important. We see that it's very popular on Gordon Street, that 10-minute interval. We need to ensure that our connections are good so that people can get to their jobs. And we need to ensure, oh, am I done? Thanks. So Hashim has a unique perspective as well.
Okay, so Hashim, you come applauded with your perspective about transit. So please address it for a minute. And just before you get started, I'm looking at the chat and there's some interesting comments. And Nora online has brought to our attention that Kingston has a free transit for seniors and students. And her curiosity is how has that worked out, which is an interesting little question. But Hashim, it's your stage.
So thank you, Leanne and Kathy, for acknowledging my experience with transportation. I have unique experience with transportation. It started with driving city bus for 2 years while I was a student and helping four transportation companies start up and build all their way until they are still operating until now. The key thing with public, of course, I believe in public transportation. It can make big change in any city and any future, the future for any city, and also for the population, for the environment. It's great to have good public network, public transit network. The challenge as well. It's like it's hard to operate buses while they are empty. This is a problem, and there is no way, the ordinary way, you can expect when people will need bus or when they don't need it. So there is a technology I really like to implement. It's not implemented at any city in Canada yet. And so we will be pioneer if we will adapt something like this. It's technology out there using the artificial intelligence to collect live data from ridership, and then we'll implement special routes with the size of the vehicle itself. So the algorithm for this system will tell us when we need a bus and how big of a bus we need and how frequently. And this is how we make it cost effective for everyone, including the city. And that's it.
Thank you, Hashim. Well, you've given us something to look forward to, and you know that a lot of people online here are going to be watching this transit master plan unfold next year. For sure. Yeah. This is a question around policing. There's been considerable community discussion about reallocating some public resources currently assigned to the police to other agencies qualified in harm reduction in crisis context associated with homelessness, with mental health, substance abuse, and related matters. Please share your thoughts on this matter. And if I may, I'm going to ask, I'm just looking to make sure that we get equity here about choices. Kathy, if you would start us off, please.
Oh, I just don't see it as an either or. I don't know that. I know the police is a big budget. It's 20%. But we have very little control. Even if we, you know, reduce their budget, we can't tell them how to spend that money. It's we give them an envelope of money and that they decide how to spend it. And from my experience in the past, when you return the police budget request down, they go to a tribunal and a provincial tribunal and they win. So we don't need to have a fight with the police. What we need to do is to fund those services that are within the envelope that we can. Like, so we've done the welcoming streets. There's other things that we could do. You know, I'm very much in favor of the housing first type programs. We're helping to fund supportive housing. We've also given the Delhi Rec Center for a transitional housing project. And, you know, we have lots of partners through the Guelph Neighborhood Support Coalition as well to help work in neighborhoods. So that's sort of what we need to do. I don't see it as an either or because it'll just end up to be confrontational. And it's not that if we had actually any control over that, you know, I might be up for it, but we don't. So why don't we put our energies into something? Why don't we put our energies into supporting those people that are marginalized and need those types of assistance, like the programs that we've been starting to get into? And again, there is a lack of leadership at the provincial level on this issue that they need to get into the picture on this as well.
Thank you, Kathy. Hisham, would you take a minute and a half, please?
Of course. So I don't think defund the police service is a good idea in general. They provide essential service, and I think we should keep it. The information that is, I need more research, that is why we can't allocate their budget the way the city wants to. So they are part of the city, and this is new information for me, to be honest. I don't know why we can't. I think allocation of the budget of the police for special programs, especially for training program, how to deal with people in need. Like, I think the confrontation starts usually with police and issues like the homeless people or anyone who's in the street is not doing a crime in their mind, but the police will see it in a different way. So I think if we can allocate the budget for more training, for more outreach program with the police, I think that will be win-win to everyone. But not to defund the police service, I don't think it's a good idea.
Thank you, Hisham. Leanne, please.
Thanks. I know that the defund police kind of movement has been the result of some, you know, abhorrent cases in other jurisdictions where police behavior has caused a lot of questioning about their mental health training and about enforcement, about targeting certain groups. And we absolutely have to deal with those systemic issues in Guelph. I'm not saying that we don't have that. But our policing, our frontline response has to be there when citizens need it. It's a mandated service. It's something that when you call 911 and you need help, you want an officer responding. But we also have to be putting, as Kathy said, this isn't an either or. There are already our Guelph Police Service, and credit to Chief Kobe and his team. They're doing mental health training. They are actively supporting our Welcoming Streets, our Neighborhood Support Coalition programs, the outreach, the neighborhood policing model, prevention. is key and core to their strategic plan. And they're doing the education training and putting resources towards that. Do we need more on the prevention side? Absolutely, through neighborhood supports, teen and youth supports, mental health supports, substance abuse, a housing first policy as crime prevention is so has so much data behind it. So we absolutely have to be investing in those things, but it does not take away from the policing budget. Those are just core services the city should be focusing on, regardless of what's going to the Guelph Police Service.
Thank you, Deanne. This is the last prepared question. So attendees, by all means, put your questions in the chat. Maureen or Marion will be monitoring those and will address those. And I'm delighted that we have time to do that. So this is the last question, and it's around the topic of that's been defined as democracy. It has been widely stated that the province's ministerial zoning orders, MZOs, and the strong mayor's legislation, Bill 3, are contrary to healthy local democratic process. Question. What are your views on this topic? And I'm going to ask Hisham, would you address that, please?
Yes, of course. I'm not sure if I mentioned this or no, but democracy is the core of my work in the last 20 years. This is my research. I have two books out about democracy. I published both of them already. So it's the core of my work. And I don't believe in like a legislative like the strong mayor. I don't believe in concentrating power in general. I don't believe in it. I think it's wrong, and it is. I saw it actually firsthand how it can affect people's life and how it can make a whole country fail. So I don't think it's the right thing. And that's why it's important for everyone to cast their votes. It's like, if you forfeit your right to vote, you should just only blame yourself, to be honest. This is your first step. You need to go step up and vote for everything. I'm not talking about only this election. For all election, we have as citizens, we have to make our voice heard. I don't know the zoning order, the MZO. I need to research more about it. I'm not very familiar with it. So I need to make more research to have an opinion. But generally speaking, my view is against concentrating of power with anything for like period of time. I don't believe it should be long, and also for the number of people, it should be widely spread between people, not in one person or in one position.
Wow, we should put you on the street corner, Hisham, and get people to vote.
Yeah.
Leanne, please.
Yeah, Hisham's absolutely right. I mean, the foundation of democracy is that it's representative and it's proportionally representative. So when Ward 5 voters send two people to council, those two people are representing a much, much larger group. And our votes should have weight at council, that our votes are taken as a whole. And there's no one individual vote that has greater power. The strong mayor powers is an American concept that doesn't even work in the urban areas like Chicago, where the strong mayor powers are in effect. I would say that those urban areas would tell you it's not an effective form of governance. My background in leadership, my master's thesis was on the representation and social capital behind municipal elected officials. And we're coming to the council chambers not from a political party. We're here representing our neighborhoods, our communities, our neighbors, and so that voice has to have that weight behind it. On MZOs, absolutely against MZOs as a
Leanne is recovering from COVID, in case you don't know, so she needs a little coughing break there. So I assume, Hal, you'll know how much time she can. Oh,
I'm good to go.
You're good to go?
Yeah, thanks. I'll keep rolling. Sorry about that. MZOs, we have authority as a municipality under the Planning Act for land use zoning. That's what municipal government does. It's one of our key functions. When a minister unilaterally takes that decision-making away from us, it flies in the face of the democratic process. That being said, there are certain occasions when an MZO has a function. So we used an MZO for Doe Line, and I did support that.
Okay, we'll give her a few seconds. And
the reason I supported it is because we still had a planning process that was going to follow. The MZO only allowed the designation of residential, and then we have a full planning process still to come on that. So there are some circumstances where it makes sense, but not as a general principle.
Thank you, Jan. Kathy, please.
So yeah, thank you. So yeah, no. Is my response the strong mayor? I don't know why you'd bother having a council with a strong mayor. You people send, like, let's say this last term, people sent Leanne and I to represent them. You lose your voice, because, you know, say in this situation where the one of the candidates is talking about pro-development, you could elect two people that are, you know, for a responsible stage development like we're doing, and you've lost your voice. So because the mayor can overrule all of that. So it's just not democracy. Democracy is precious. Ask people in Ukraine. And as far as the MZO goes, that's a planning process. So what's happening across the province is through these ministerial zoning orders, land is getting zoned. Pieces of wetland and sensitive areas are suddenly getting zoned with these MZOs without any kind of environmental assessments and proper planning processes and no consultation. It almost seems like it's intentionally to bypass all those processes. And that's kind of scary for our community to have the province come in and said, we're just going to zone that. What if they came in on the OR land and said, oh, heck with the heritage stuff you want, heck with the contamination that's there. We're just going to zone it and develop on it. That's the type of thing that's been happening across the province. So I think it's really problematic.
Thank you. Well, it's wonderful to see consensus, and I think there'll be a collective sigh of relief and cheering on that. I think you can tell by the nature of the question even that it raised exactly those concerns that you addressed. So there is an invitation to post questions because this is the end of the prepared questions. I did receive a question from someone who is unable to attend. And that was a question about communication. And the question was, we're hearing so much about what's happening in the city, what's happening in Ward 5. What are you putting in place and how can we enhance that kind of communication? This particular person in our ward was concerned that she was not able to access it. So would you define, please, for us what you are doing and how can you do more? So I'm going to ask, Kathy, if you would address that first, please.
So engaging with the community is one of the things I really enjoy about the job. And I think Leanne and I have worked really hard on that. I mean, we hold town halls. We have an email list of people who want to sign up. They can sign up for our email list. And so we do newsletters quite regularly to people. And we hold town halls and we invite staff members. We do them in public and we've done them by Zoom when the COVID hit. We invite staff members to inform the public on different programs or policies that are working on. We're active on social. We've been active on social media. I run the Facebook part of it. Leanne runs the website part of it. And, you know, when things come up, there's, you know, I often send emails to the head of the Old University neighborhood or McAdary community to tell them that, you know, these things are happening in the community that might impact you, that you might want to comment on, because they may have missed, you know, the correspondence out of it. you know, there are ways we can do more. And I know that the city's working on some more digital things, and they're working on a public engagement strategy, because as you said, there's some people that do not feel their voice is being heard. We've seen that in a survey, or they have influence at council. And so we need to work on that. And the city is just, I think they call it One Voice. I don't have the exact name of it, but they're working on a strategy now with community consultation, how the city as a whole can better communicate to its citizens.
That's time.
Thank you, Kathy. Hisham.
So of course I didn't communicate with anyone yet. So this is my first time, but I made some research and I found out that is it was an idea just to have an app for Ward 5, since everyone on their phone now, everyone has a smartphone. Most people have smartphones, and most people on their phone all the time. So I found that is we can have an app, a mobile app for Ward 5 that will include all kind of communication, live streaming for the city hall meetings. We can hold our monthly city halls remotely. We don't have all to be there. Of course, we will hold some in person, but the whole idea will be, we will have, hopefully it's not very expensive. So far, my research showed that it is not very expensive to have, because it's already pre-built. And the idea will have everything in one place. You go, you read the news, you read the bylaws, you see the meetings, you can reach your councils, you do everything. So it's exactly, I see what Leanne and Kathy, they have now as a website. I see they have website, people can interact with them. It will be almost the same, but on a mobile app, basically. That's hopefully that will make it more accessible and make people feel that is communication is easier with the council.
Leanne, please.
Yeah, great question. I mean, technology has changed so much. So my first response is obviously we'll embrace new technologies and bring them on. Happy that I was only the second councillor in the history of the city of Guelph to be on social media and have a website. Ward 5 was the first website for a council ward ever, and things have just rapidly changed and evolved since then. So a mobile app, being able to do town halls, how many of us were comfortable with Zoom 2.5 years ago? Our newsletter and our website are constantly evolving as well. We have online surveys through social media. We did a survey earlier this year where we went out to ward residents and said, what are the issues that are most important to you, to get feedback on those types of issues, even before the election period started. And of course, technology is only one way. The most important, I think, obviously is in person. We're a social species. So being out and about in the community, attending events, going to community events, walking the talk when it comes to volunteerism and being part of community organizations. That's the one thing I've missed the last 2.5 years. And I'm really looking forward to getting back to actually be interacting with the community and with my neighbors.
And I'm going to add one little feature that I really liked, and that's how you select and feature and focus on a hero, someone in Ward 5. Mm. And I must say, I enjoy browsing those. There's two questions from the floor. One of them is the question from Nora, and let's address that. So the statement is, Kingston had free transit for senior students, and I wonder how that worked out, and is there a precedent of encouraging more ridership? And if I may, please, Leanne, would you just start us off on that?
Sure. I think the first part of that question is, how did it work out? I don't have an answer to that, because I would have to look at the Kingston data. And if ridership increased and increased the modal share to transit, then that's the kind of data that I would be looking for to be able to use that model to make a decision about Guelph Transit offering free ridership to seniors as well. We do have reduced bus passes to enable more seniors, and certainly low-income seniors especially, to make use of transit. We have our accessibility transit available for seniors, but the more, even more.
Kathy, please.
I just have it from the mayor of Kingston. In that I was on the Board of Association of Municipalities with him. And I asked him about, you know, the success of that program and the free passes. And he said, I think, you know, and I don't quote me on this, but it was something phenomenal. Like there was an increase about 10% in ridership. It was a significant change. And so we've made that first step this year. We have this affordable bus pass. You can get a pass for as little as $4. Though I think there's some stigma maybe attached in applying. So I think we have to really look at that one for seniors. But the, you know, we've done the 12 and under now free as a pilot. I'd like to see the teenagers, because when you get them young like that, they become usually lifelong transit riders. And that will really increase our modal share for transit. So I think we know what was successful there, and we're moving in that direction. It's quite clear.
Jan, please.
Of course, it's a good idea if the city budget can afford it. And like, I hope my plan will, I hope I will implement it at some point. In 15 to 20 years, actually, the city can afford free rides for all Guelph residents. If what I want to do will work the way it's supposed to do, of course, maybe it won't be that easy, but that's why it's like it's 20 years plan. The city will be able to offer free rides to everyone. I lived in Bloomington, Indiana, in the U.S. For example, the half of the city bus was free. So the part of the city bus was for free, like half of the routes were for free. And of course, you can see how big the difference in ridership. Like there would be these buses, the free buses, they're always busy versus the ones that is you pay for, it's less busy. So it's a good idea. It's a good investment in the long term, but I don't think with our traditional way of managing transportation, we can afford it. But hopefully with future technology, we will be able to at least reduce it significantly and make it free for everyone within 20 years, I hope.
Thank you. Thank you for the question, Nora. Interesting discussion. There's a question from Sue, and it's a question about trees and canopies. Ward 5 is one of the areas in Guelph with the best tree canopy and also the best soil growing big trees. As well, we are facing big pressure on densifying buildings and splitting lots into smaller parcels. With the goal of 40% canopy, how can we protect both the current canopy and the plantable spaces as bigger and more house plants get approved? Ancillary buildings are also compromising our planting spaces. So would you unpack that for us, please? Hisham, I'm going to ask you to start that, please.
Of course. So I believe in the environment is very important, of course. So it's I think we should put restriction on removing trees on certain age. It depends on the size of them, and the age, of course, is what matters. But we can measure the age by the size. We should put some restrictions. We can just remove them, and I believe the developers will be able to work out. I mean, it's not like we are not telling them not to remove any trees at all, even if they want to build something. I think they can work something out. And in case if something they have to remove it, they should plant many more. It depends on the age of the tree. So you can just say 3 or 4 or 5 based on, they will be all the same. I think we should know how big is the tree and then compensate with 5 to 10 trees in return in the same neighborhood. So it will be, if you remove tree from Ward 5, you should put 10 trees in Ward 5 as well. You can just go anywhere and put. Again, Kathy and Leanne will be the experts in this. I don't know if we can or no. I hope we can. I don't know if the city council can regulate something like this, but we should, if we can't, at least incentivize developers not to remove time. Trees.
Thank you, Isham. No. Kathy, please.
Thanks. So Sue knows this is an issue near and dear to my heart. So the problematic in that we don't have tree protection for our lots under half an acre. And when the tree protection bylaw comes up this next year, we need to do that. So So a lot of other communities have it. So it's just the size of a tree, and they have to get it. You have to get a permit for that. The problem too with when developments come in, these smaller, even a single house, there's not even any guidelines or enforcement on how to protect the trees they want to keep. So you see bulldozers going around them, and the roots cut off. So this is something that we've been lobbying for a while now. It's finally coming to council next year for public engagement. And I think we really need to work to get that, to get the community on side and engaged on doing that. You know, as there's other things, you know, around trees that we should be doing in this neighborhood. And then Trees for Guelph was at the Urner meeting the other night, and he was talking about a program about helping people plant trees in their backyard and things like that. So we need to even increase what we've got in the old university neighborhood for the next generations. Also, I was talking to a recent landscaper who talked about a place like Oakville has tree canopy minimums for a site plan. So we talk about it for the whole city, but developers are required to have a minimum for of a canopy cover in the development, in their landscape plans. And I think that's something I'd like to bring forward. Oakville has one, and I've seen it. It's really quite good. So I think that's something I'd like to explore.
Thank you. Leanne, please.
Yeah, along the same lines, the lots that we need to make sure that we continue with our zoning bylaw requirements, that every lot can actually support a tree. There seems to be conversations in the community about allowing driveway widths that are over 50% of the lot line. And for medium and high density types of developments, that means there's no room for a tree. And we need to, you know, for single family lots, it's not nearly as much of an issue, but for the medium density townhouse lots, if you don't have enough room to have water recharge on a drip line for a tree, it's not going to survive. So planting trees is only one part of the equation. So having the trees survive to maturity is another key part of the equation. We also need to make sure that our boulevard trees, so many of them have been lost, if we want to encourage the modal split and active transportation, having a shaded walk. I mean, how many of us have walked along an area, you know, heading downtown where you're in the bright sun and there's no shade, and you go off route just to find a route where you can walk in the shade on a hot summer's day? So boulevard trees at every transit stop. I've seen moms and strollers shading their kids, trying to stand at a bus stop in the heat of a summer's day. So we need to identify public areas where trees are absolutely essential. Make sure that every transit stop and boulevard had shaded areas. More food forests. A lot of our parks. Parks. We could be planting more native species as well in our parks.
Sounds like that public engagement is a promise we'll look forward to, because I think you may get a number of Ward 5 people that would attend that. Thank you for that question, Marion. So we're now getting towards the close, and we have promised each of the candidates an opportunity to make a 1.5-minute summation to present their last wise words that they want to leave with us. So by our selection process, Kathy, you will be the first to address that, please. 1.5 minutes.
Okay, thank you. Thanks again for hosting this event. So I was recently asked for my past election experience, what was different about this election? And I would have to say that many residents are talking more about global and national issues like housing affordability, mental health and addiction, inflation and climate change. Yes, there's still the talk about, you know, the parking on the street and garbage and those types of things. But the main focus seems to have been on these broader societal issues. And we've had some success this past term. We've had funding for supportive housing, electrifying our bus fleet. We're planting 10,000 trees a year, the cultural heritage plan, moving forward on the OR, cultural heritage district. And there's so much more that we can be doing. As I stated earlier, we all want to live in an affordable, safe, inclusive, and sustainable community that supports the well-being of everyone. To achieve this, community leaders must work together. Municipalities have a role to play in finding solutions to those broader issues. However, we need to work with community partners and other levels of government. Municipalities cannot tackle some of these issues alone. So my background and my record show that I'm a bridge builder who works collaboratively with others to find the solutions to community challenges and to plan for future generations. We must do our due diligence too and take the time to be well informed on matters coming before council. Complex issues require complex solutions and you need to do your homework. I am proud of my 20 years of service. It's a measure of my success at representing you and other Ward 5 residents. And I will continue to be an effective and responsive voice on City Council. And I ask for your support on October 24th. And you can find out more about my campaign at kathydowner.ca. But please, most important, get out and vote, please.
Thank you, Kathy. Leanne, please.
Great, thanks. I want to use my closing minute to highlight and celebrate some of the amazing accomplishments of the last term of council. Often during the election campaign, we get so involved in issues, we forget about the things that we have accomplished and things that are still in process. The best predictor of future leadership is past performance. We are nationally and internationally recognized as one of Canada's most livable cities in one of the safest and most caring communities. This year, we upgraded to a AAA credit rating, the highest attainable score by Standards and Poor's, and we supported the construction of not one, but three supportive housing projects that will provide stable housing for our most vulnerable residents. We've approved the construction of our new main library downtown because we entered into this partnership to develop the entire Baker Street district into a thriving urban mixed-use center. And we've weathered the storm of COVID together and still have one of the lowest unemployment rates in the country. We've updated our decades-old zoning bylaw and our parkland dedication bylaw, which has set us down a path for city building in the future. And we've implemented a never-before-done multi-year budgeting process. And I'm most proud of our commitment to net zero by 2050, because we know that we have to build this resilient city so that we can pass it on to our grandchildren. And we know that we can always improve. My commitment to you is that we will continue to seek efficiencies and innovation and best practices in everything we do. The most important, as Kathy said, is to get out and vote on October 24th.
Okay. Hisham, please.
So of course, thank you everyone for attending, and I'm really happy to be here, and I'm really happy with the experience I have so far. It's a great experience. It's a learning experience for me, and I promise I will be here no matter what the outcome. I made many new friends, including, of course, to start with Leanne and Kathy. They are the first friends I made, and I will be very happy to support them if the outcome was not what I wish for, but I would be happy to support them and support all as a resident of Ward 5 and Guelph, and provide my ideas. As you may see, I believe in diversity. Diverse organizations are a very strong organization, and I bring this to the table. And I'm also a client-oriented person, so I promise when elected, I will be like your vote. I will advocate your voice to the council. And in case if there is, of course, I can just like, it has to be reasonable. So in case if there is something, I have a bigger picture I need to explain, I will have this dialogue with as many residents as I can to explain to them why I voted for an issue this way in case if they don't agree with me. And thank you for everyone. And as Leanne and Kathy said, please go to vote.
Thank you.
Boy, if we could all unmute and clap and play and stuff, this has been absolutely the most informative, respectful, wonderful candidates meeting. I do regret that the other three candidates are not here. I'm not sure why they're not. And I think that is most unfortunate if your name is on the ballot. But we really, really sincerely thank you three for being here. And it's wonderful that you participated. And at the same time, we recognize and are most grateful for the people that are participating online here and show that passion and interest about the process and about Ward 5 and about the city and have attended here. So I think we can be pretty confident that they're all going to be, we are all going to be voting, I'm sure. So this whole session was the culminating of several community groups, and being part of that dynamic group, and just it was just an organic group, and I think it's wonderful and characteristic perhaps of the city of Guelph that there are a number of different voices, and we came together and were able to provide this. And for your interest, the other five wards are also having exactly the same session. And after this, the leaders were going to be getting together and just kind of debrief and say, whoa, is there something here that we need to continue? In closing, if I may, I want to also let you know about the mayoral event that's happening on October the 11th. And that too came out of a concern that there weren't enough opportunities to hear the voices. And it's going to be held at Dublin Street United Church. And the groups that came together to plan this, they would like to focus on social justice issues. So you may be interested in attending that. We would love to see you there as well and mingle and hear what the mayoral candidates have to say. So, we're 10 minutes early. Anybody have a burning question at the end? Wow. I mean, it's not good to finish early, is it? Let me ask you one question that's come up at a number of other events that I've been, and that is what you, and maybe you've already answered a number of times, but with our choices, what would you bring, the one thing that you would bring, you think, to Ward 5? You can showcase your what you said in the closing comments. This is kind of a filler for the 10 minutes, folks, but we might as well take advantage of the time while we've got them here, unless somebody else would. The question is the mayor debate only in person, not online? It is only in person. The room where we're holding it doesn't have the virtual capacity, I don't think, but that's a very interesting question, and I'm going to check into that. So see if we can make it virtual so that you could be there as well. And Carol, you're absolutely right. Her comment, I was going to say that too. She said, it would be wonderful if all three of you could represent us.
Thank you.
We want to see your three voices in the city. And there's a transit plan coming up in the future, right? So there you go. Thanks, everyone, was a comment too. Good to see the cooperation and interest in making Guelph the best for everyone. So thank you very much for those chat comments as well. I am going to do, should I give you 30 seconds to say that? Just, all right, why don't we do that? 30 seconds, your best feature. And Kathy, tell us.
I would say it's my skill at collaboration and building positive relationships with other people. So I have a history of that. It's such a priority for me to build those positive relationships as soon as I've gotten elected each time, to meet with staff and other counselors and community partners and talk about where can we have common ground here and where can we work together to make Guelph a better place.
Leanne, 30 seconds. What about you?
For me, I think the greatest plague in government at all levels is short-sightedness. And so what I bring to the table is a long-term view. I'm looking 20, 30 years. I'm looking towards a Guelph where I'm not even going to be here to enjoy it. And I think that's what I'm bringing to the table is I'm not looking for political expediency. This is not a career for me. This is something that I consider community service. And I'm in it for the long haul to make sure that we have a Guelph we can be proud of decades from now.
Hisham.
For me, I believe I will be able to find and implement new technologies that will make everyone's life easier and also make more money to the city budget. I believe this technology already exists, and I'm working on some of them. So I think everyone will be happy with more money to spend and to receive money as well, or receive service that is it doesn't cost the city as much.
Thank you. Thank you again, Austri. I have moderated over the last two decades many, many, many candidates' meetings, and I have to say this was most pleasurable and really, really appreciated. So I'm going to share screen the final slide that we made, which for those of you still looking for information, this is the city has fabulous bios. I like what the Mercury has done. They have focused on each of the candidates and done an interview. And so take advantage of this. There are advanced polls that are coming up 2 days from now that you might want to take advantage of. And other than that, I want to thank Marion. Thank you for moderating and the chat line and for doing all that technology. I'm glad you brought Hisham back into the picture so quickly. And thank you to Les for being our timer. It's always kind of a challenge when you're doing that virtually. So good night, everybody.
Good night. Good night. Good night.